interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Toot Busting episode BTWRLM 673. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed and bring those miscreants with you. And we're continuing donation season. Really have a lot of hardware to replace. I would hope that more people would step up with the donations and keep this white elephant running, actually getting slim and trim. And really, the building of the infrastructure that we build inside is going long term. And I don't know if you've heard of all the price increases. Sound is doing a yeoman's work to find those deals, so keep everything flying. And he was able to get two more drives. And so we could use a little bit more there to get those drives back up. And then some other things that are coming up. If you would please find the donate buttons or buy the crew a coffee. And again, the crew works about 24/7 with people that are involved. And so there's always something going on. And I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a whole lot more content and quite a few more listeners that are listening all at the same time, which is pretty neat to see finally and again. And so we would like to see that grow more. And I'm understanding some of the platforms that the Sound has us on, we're actually sitting in the top one and two. We're doing pretty well. And so that sounds pretty nice on everybody, all the hosts that we've ever had, all the hosts that were ever neat to have around. He's trying to find and curate all that and put it on the network so that you can select who you want to listen to. Maybe do the rounds and find out what everyone was saying and how that all integrated. And to my mind, as it was being talked about over 15 years now, 10 years, 15, it was all about right. It's all pretty close to about right. There's not a whole lot that was changed, and here we are. And we're still at the same problem. What are we going to do about it? Part of what you can do about it, if you can't do much else, is you can donate what you can. And the content providers, we could use more content. Again, I'd really like to see a live network. It was said that they wouldn't go. They're going to go the way of the dodo bird. I suppose that's true if people wanted it that. And I suppose that YouTube can give everybody a run for their money, but look what goes on, and people don't wean themselves from it either, which is a fascination to me. So we see these kinds of things, and it just makes Real Liberty Media Network even more important. And one of the last vestiges of uncensorable, hopefully completely uncensorable content. And the reason why that is because, again, the hardware and the connections that are all being done, the networking that's done that no one's ever going to know about, that sits there being connected up through places so that the word continues to get out. And again, eventually, some of you who want to contribute hardware yourself and you keep running it, you can be, if you will, a node. We haven't even discussed that part, but you'll be able to provide some of the content. Like, it's what was called federated. You become part of that. So if they start wiping people out, they've got to find everybody. Anyway, so there's a little bit of a future built into RLM. Right now, we're getting the fundamentals. We're kind of getting back to the continuous feeds that are available. And like I said, we're starting to hit lots of listenership all the time on the network. Some come to my broadcasts and some don't. And so that's the way we play that. It doesn't really matter. You find what you think you need, I suppose. You use that as you can and as you will. But from the Department of It Don't Mean Nothing If It Ain't a Treaty, but I can spin it to make me look great, beautiful, the best, the very best ever, really, U.S.-Iran deal signing scheduled for Sunday. The signing of the deal on the ending of the conflict between the United States and Iran is scheduled for Sunday, U.S. President Donald Trump said on Saturday. But the rumors were floated, kind of a pun intended there, the rumors were floated Friday, Hormuz Strait, Trump saying Tehran approved a framework agreement. So, only a framework agreement, not a peace agreement, and certainly not a treaty. Well, the markets reacted positively Monday, and here is another insider profit-taking opportunity. So do we file this under prospects better than ever, but wouldn't bet on it, or the midterm election press? Trump wrote, it would be better than the 2015 agreement struck between Iran, the European Union, and the U.S. under former U.S. President Barack Obama. Quote, Barack Hussein Obama's deal with Iran, the JCPOA, was an easy, beautiful, smooth road to a nuclear weapon, which Iran would have had 6 years ago and would have used long before now, close quote, Trump wrote, but no, it wasn't. And Satan Yehu Milikowski had said the same thing since around, what, 1995? But there's no evidence, even though the great Satan and Satan Yehu's spies were or are crawling all over Iran to find any nuclear weapons, or even a hint of an attempt that Satan Yehu has falsely promoted for decades that Iran has 3 months, 3 weeks, even 3 minutes away, there they are, ready to make that weapon. And on the other hand, despite U.S. law, which includes specific provisions that prohibit providing support or funding to nuclear-armed nations that are not parties to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, and despite various non-proliferation sanction laws, Israel is freed from the federal government all that time and since, being a nuclear-armed terrorist called the State of Israel, who is not a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Quote, my agreement with Iran is the exact opposite, a wall to no nuclear weapon, close quote, he claimed. So that's a very interesting statement, isn't it? Emphatically, a wall to no nuclear weapon. Now, how are we supposed to decipher a wall to no nuclear weapons? Is Trump as the idiot in chief, or Trump as the idiot in chief? Who speaks like this? An obstruction to no nuclear weapons would be a path to nuclear weapons, wouldn't it? And if Iran were ever to obtain a nuclear weapon and join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, something Israel and bestest buds India or Pakistan have not done and do not suffer sanctions under U.S. law, nothing more can be said to Iran if Trump or the United States are trustworthy and honorable. So building a wall to no nuclear weapon is the lawful response, recognizing Iran's path to nuclear weapons, if Iran so chooses, isn't it? And they have decided to so not choose, and I think that was very wise, and they have other weapons. Like they control the Strait of Hormuz. Like they have hypersonic weapons that act like they're nuclear weapons. On a small scale. Maybe a weak, compromised, tough guy in chief needs to speak in riddles to allow him to save face when the actual Zionist mafia dons, the Mossad bosses, become alarmed, or the public Trump was to serve first before his profiteering family or Zionists catches on. I guess we'll see, won't we? Quote, in fact, they no longer want a nuclear weapon, nor will they have one, either through purchase, development, or any other form of procurement, close quote. And I say, what's the point there? Iran stated it did not want nuclear weapons before Trump became beholden to his Zionist bribers. I mean, campaign and pet project contributors, Mossad handlers, or Satan Yehu's lapdog, or even to the future that they want. And how do we know that Trump is a weak president? Because a strong president would have taken Iran at its word regarding its no nuke aspirations, would not sound like Satan Yehu's parrot, and would keep the word of the United States honoring its international obligations and duty, and he would have kicked all the Zionist parasites to the curb, would actually seek peace in the world, not act like a pirate, as he declared. He would have set the example for keeping the peace without threat, and he could have been that strong. But Trump would have commanded the identification and ending of genocide, war crimes, and destruction of the people of Palestine, and of Palestine, not invested in it, for starters. But we see none of that, do we? Nothing like the sort. We only see self-promotion for fixing things that weren't broke. Trump said the deal would mean the Strait of Hormuz will be open to all. But it was open. And without the recently announced Iran and Oman new framework for service fees and other administration of the Strait of Hormuz, close quote, directly out of the reports, brought on by Trump and Yehu. Before Trump and Steen wasted over $100 billion and caused your cost of living to skyrocket faster than a SpaceX spacecraft, causing stress and hardship in your lives, which Trump said he was fine with. After, quote, all is calm, close quote, the U.S. will go in and get the, quote, nuclear dust, close quote. But how does the let them eat chaos in chief define calm? I'll be interested to see this in the agreement, quote, getting the dust, close quote, because Iran said, no way are you getting any uranium. Quote, we look forward to working with Iran and the entire Middle East long into the future, close quote, Trump added. He warned that if the agreement fails, the U.S. has, quote, the ultimate alternative, hopefully never to be used again, close quote. See? The Mar-a-Lago Mahler organized crime threats. Nothing but conditions allowing for unilateral determined future attacks against Iran. And that's no deal. So told y'all. And the organized crime family, a tough guy in chief, can kick this can all the way past the Zio billionaire bought midterm elections, which need to be midterm ejections for those of you voting harder, except that pre-signing and thank you to Pakistan for stepping up for its hard work mediating. The Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif described the agreement as a memorandum called the Islamabad Memorandum of Understanding and only a potential foundation for lasting peace, despite all their hard work. Quite amazing what Pakistan diplomats were doing. Now that's a lot of hesitation short of an actual peace accord right there, what that negotiator, mediator was doing and telling us. So let's hope Trump turned over a new leaf and becomes trustworthy to Iran, that the deal means something permanent and does stop the killing in the Middle East and restores more normal transit through the Strait. But what then is Satan Yehu to do? Does my listener really think this kabuki theater play is over? We'll see, won't we? And the let them eat chaos in chief couldn't resist some more pre-signing theatrics on the high UFCs. Iran rejects Trump's deal signing claim, calls Sunday deadline a birthday propaganda event. Now, to read this article, hit the reader view on your browser to get beyond the sign-in, and it'll bring up all the text for this. Otherwise, you'll be truncated and we can't follow along for those of you that do. Iran directly rejects Trump's new claim of a deal being signed tomorrow, saying the insistence of signing the deal on specifically Sunday is engineered around his own birthday, calling it a propaganda event that Trump is trying to turn into a unilateral, quote, symbolic occasion, close quote, for himself. Along with his UFC White House event, the Iranian negotiating team says, quote, will not permit such a media and ceremonial maneuver, close quote, explicitly stating that the Memorandum of Understanding has not been finalized and no signing will happen. The definitive rejection from Tehran, initially reported by Fars News Agency, directly challenges the narrative promoted by the White House over recent days. The source close to the delegation stated the reports claiming a final agreement has been reached are completely inaccurate. The public rejection from Tehran marks an unusual moment in the negotiations, a direct named contradiction of a sitting U.S. president's claim about an active diplomatic process. And as I interject here, this is why I'm reading these reports in order relative to this really historic event. America lost the war. It lost like they did in Ukraine. The opening salvo should have never pulled the trigger. But we're watching, as I told you before, enough is enough. Nations are enough and enough, and they're going to stand up. We're watching that. This is very historic stuff going on. And the standing up of a nation against a sitting president, particularly the American president, is the stuff that history books will be written about in the future, given they're not written by the Zionists. The Iranians' team's decision to go on record through state media suggests a deliberate choice to push back openly rather than through back channels. By categorically denying both the 14th June date and the Geneva venue, Iran has effectively stalled the momentum the U.S. administration attempted to build. The focus must now return to the substantive details of the draft rather than a fast-tracked public relations announcement. So Iran didn't miss an opportunity for a diplomatic smackdown on the UF high seas. Then the flip-flopper-in-chief doubles down on diplomatic dumbassery. Not final. If I don't like it, I will go back to the dropping bombs, close quote. Trump signals hard line on MOU with Iran as signing scheduled for Friday, just 48 hours ahead of the signing of the crucial peace deal with Iran. U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday said that the MOU is, quote, not final, close quote, threatening that the war may resume if, quote, they don't behave, close quote. Speaking during the bilateral meeting with the president of the Arab Republic of Egypt at the G7 summit, Trump firmly stated that the U.S. will go back to, quote, dropping bombs, close quote, if he is unappreciative of the final shape of the deal. Keep track of how this is all working up, too, and what we're really dealing with here. Asked by the reporters if the agreement between U.S. and Iran was now final, Trump said, it's not final. It's a memorandum of understanding, and if I don't like it, we'll go back to shooting them and dropping bombs on their heads. If I don't like it, if they don't behave, we'll go back to dropping bombs right smack in the middle of their head. Okay? Because they misbehaved for 47 years. Similarly, as the Ukraine 2014 coup, the U.S. and Britain orchestrated a coup on August 19, 1953 that overthrew Iran's democratically elected Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh and reinstated the Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, solidifying a pro-Western dictatorship which was overthrown by the current government of Iran. The misbehaving they're doing. So except for self-interested claptrap, how is taking your country back from an occupier misbehaving? What principled thinking people would ever say such a thing, let alone to speak of an intention to commit war crimes, drop bombs on their heads? War crimes, folks, is how far off Trump is. He's not right. He's got some real problems. Earlier, following U.S. President Donald Trump's announcement that the deal with Iran was, quote, complete, close quote, and will be signed on Friday, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance on Monday said that both sides have already, quote, signed the deal digitally, close quote, stressing that any sanctions relief for Tehran as part of the agreement would depend on the Islamic Republic's compliance with commitments under the agreement. So I guess we stay tuned for the next installment of the taco-slinging flip-flopper-in-chief as U.S. and Iran did sign the Memorandum of Understanding. On Sunday, U.S. President Donald Trump and Iran Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Gharibabadi confirmed the finalization of a Memorandum of Understanding, which is to be physically signed in Switzerland on June 19th. A digital signing was made on Sunday, as we heard Vice President Vance say earlier. The details of the Memorandum of Understanding signed by the United States and Iran will be made public within the next 2 days. Vance further said that Washington hopes to release the content of the agreement sometime this week. And with that, the United States loses another war because it's run by losers, because Trump likes to be surrounded by losers, he said. And the American public gets to pay for it dearly. So this has all been a family affair, right, Sly Stone? Trump praises Putin and Xi over Iran peace deal. Moscow has repeatedly urged Washington and Tehran to de-escalate while maintaining contact with all parties in the conflict. U.S. President Donald Trump has praised Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping for their roles in bringing about a peace settlement with Iran. Moscow has repeatedly offered its mediation services, urged all sides to de-escalate, while Trump made the remarks on Sunday in an interview with the New York Times hours after he announced that Washington and Tehran have reached a Pakistani and Qatari-mediated deal to end the conflict. According to several media reports, a 14-point memorandum of understanding includes provisions on the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz without tolls, easing of U.S. sanctions, and unfreezing of Iranian assets with a formal signing ceremony to take place in Geneva on Friday. Iran is also expected to reaffirm its pledge to abstain from nuclear weapons, with final nuclear talks to conclude within 60 days. Trump subsequently praised Putin and Xi for their input in negotiations. He described Xi as a, quote, a total gentleman, close quote, noting that China, quote, did not send a tanker along with 20 destroyers on each side of it to try and break up the blockade, close quote, which could have brought Washington and Beijing to the brink of an open conflict. Like China, Russia consistently called for de-escalation from the early days of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran, with Moscow denouncing the strikes as, quote, an unprovoked act of armed aggression, close quote. And I highlight these phrases. I would like you to research them and go find where international law, the norms of international interaction, is where you find these statements made. They're not just making this up to make it sound neat. This is the standards that they are reinforcing that should have been met. The unprovoked act of armed aggression was not supposed to happen. Since the start of hostilities in late February, Putin and Trump have spoken by phone at least three times. In March, in late April, when Trump said Putin had offered to help end the war, and again on Sunday, when the two discussed the near-finalized memorandum, according to Kremlin aide Yuri Yushchev. Moscow also put forward a nuclear compromise offering to transport and store Iran's enriched uranium stockpile on Russian soil. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi confirmed the proposal had been discussed, but said Tehran was not ready to put it on the agenda while thanking, quote, Russian friends for their offer and their intention to help resolve this problem, close quote. Amid a hike in oil prices caused by the disruptions in the Strait of Hormuz, Putin earlier this month pushed back against what he called, quote, speculation, close quote, that Russia had emerged as a sole financial winner from the conflict. Quote, the oil rally is taking place, but it's a temporary and short-term one. Meanwhile, we would like to build relationships with our partners on a long-term basis. In this case, we are interested in the end of the conflict and as soon as possible, close quote, he said. Okay, now finish the Epstein files, would you please? Trump confirms U.S.-Iran Memorandum of Understanding signed. Quote, I'm very happy to say the deals are signed, that the Strait of Hormuz is already partially open, close quote. Trump confirmed that during a joint press conference with French President Emmanuel Macron from Evian, France. And so we're going through consistently that there is a condition going on. Everybody knows it's all right. This is not really the question Trump created. This is not the spectacle he wanted to see. And Iran didn't fall for it. And so now he's gotten back into line, just as they all agreed. And but before we get all giddy in the anticipation of biting peace, what's actually in this deal, so-called, this deal? Iran and U.S. agree on peace deal roadmap. What is and isn't known? Tehran and Washington have reached a preliminary agreement to end the conflict in the Middle East. The U.S. and Iran have reached a preliminary agreement to end the hostilities in the Middle East following weeks of direct and indirect negotiations mediated by Pakistan. A formal ceremony to sign the Iran-U.S. Memorandum of Understanding will take place in Geneva on Friday. According to Washington, the deal was signed digitally over the weekend. More confirmation. It's going as they talked about, not as Trump tried to promote. I guess is the point I want to keep hammering home here. The text of the agreement has not yet been released to the public, while Tehran and Washington have been making contradicting statements on the contents. According to the media reports, the MOU includes 14 points, including a permanent end to the hostilities across all fronts, including in Lebanon, sanctions relief, the unfreezing of Iranian assets, reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, and U.S. commitment to not interfere in Iran's affairs, and other clauses. And let me suggest about this differentiate the contradicting statements. Iran's statements were backed up by the Pakistani mediators as being correct, not as Washington was trying to spin everything, which we know is tied to the insiders making their money, isn't it? And your prices keep going up. The ceasefire. The agreement appears to extend the shaky ceasefire for another 60 days to facilitate further negotiations. Both sides, quote, declared the immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, including in Lebanon, according to Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif. Tehran has long insisted that any agreement must include an end to the hostilities in Lebanon, where Israel has been waging a campaign against Hezbollah. And because Trump and Steve calls all the shots, Israel, which is not a party of the agreement, said its forces are not withdrawing from the country. Its military activities are repeatedly put the negotiations between the U.S. and Tehran on the brink, prompting renewed exchanges in long-range strikes, including a major flare-up last weekend. U.S. President Donald Trump, who has reportedly crashed with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on several occasions over West Jerusalem's action, said he wanted to, quote, see if we can straighten out the Lebanon thing, close quote, suggesting that ending the hostilities there, quote, should not be tough, close quote. Trump clashed with Netanyahu? If this were more than a kabuki clash, do you think Israel would exist? The Strait of Hormuz status. The Strait of Hormuz has remained disrupted for years due to hostilities which heavily impacted global energy supply and maritime commodity freight. Trump has announced the major waterway would be reopened, quote, permanently toll-free, close quote, stating he has ordered the end of the U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports. Multiple Iranian media reports, however, have suggested that the toll-free transit pertains only to the 60-day negotiation period and that Tehran intends to impose fees on transiting vessels later on. Now, this is fees, not tolls. That's right, fees, not tolls. Unlike, at least until determined otherwise, President surcharges, fees, or taxes. Iran has introduced a new system to regulate the strait amid the conflict, charging vessels transiting through it, and has repeatedly said that there is no returning to the situation in the waterway that existed before the war. Relative to Iran's nuclear program, both the U.S. and Iran have made assurances that Tehran will never be able to procure nuclear weapons. While the U.S. and Israel have repeatedly claimed that Iran is seeking to do so, Tehran has long maintained its nuclear programs only serves peaceful civilian purposes. Media reports indicate the MOU pushes the issues down the road, a peace, with a final settlement on nuclear issues envisaged within 60 days. According to Trump, the final agreement, not the recently signed roadmap to an agreement, with Iran will guarantee that the country is restricted to enriching uranium levels that, quote, could never be used by the military, close quote. And this is what I was suggesting, too. If they've already committed to not go military weapons, they need it for their medical industries. And that's where it ends up being, doesn't it? Right where they have the right to be. There's no win here. This war went to nowhere. Financial issues. Sanctions relief and financial issues have emerged as the most contradictory parts of the upcoming deal. According to Iranian media reports, the U.S. has agreed to unfreeze $24 billion Bravo dollars in Iranian assets. Iranian assets. This is not America's assets. These are Iranian assets that America is stealing, with half of the sum set to be handed back to the country before final agreement is reached. Washington also reportedly promised to suspend sanctions on Iranian oil, petrochemical products, and related exports, as well as presenting a reconstruction plan worth at least $300 billion Bravo dollars for Iran. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, however, has denied that the deal envisions any unfreezing of Iranian assets. He also said Tehran can have access to the reconstruction fund, quote, so long as they honor their end of the obligation, close quote. The fund is set to be bankrolled by the, quote, Gulf Coast Coalition, close quote, Vance told CBS News without naming any nations involved. What's Israel say? Who cares? Israel's not a party, right? Except that the Zionist political movement, pretending to be the state of Israel, is a global terrorist, in fact and law. Who cares about Israel's terrorist stance in opposition? They need to be relocated and relegated to a small rock outcropping in the South China Sea. It remains unclear whether West Jerusalem will comply with the deal and halt its campaign against Hezbollah militant group in Lebanon, one of the key demands raised by Tehran. It doesn't remain unclear. Netanyahu has already stated the terrorist demands. I say to a rock outcropping with them, all of them. Every last piece of concentrated evil, right? Little Kevin Haddock? Say hi to Sean Connery for me, thanks. While Israel attacked Iran alongside the U.S. in late February, it ultimately ended up sidelined and was not represented at the Pakistani-mediated negotiations to end the conflict. Top Israeli officials have met the announced deal with belligerent statements, with no right of self-defense minister Israel Katz providing the first official reaction to it. On Monday, he said the Greater Zionist Terrorism Project will not withdraw from the vast swaths of territory seized in southern Lebanon during the campaign. Later in the day, far-right National Security Minister for Terrorism Itamar Ben-Gvir stated that Israel is not bound by the agreement. Quote, we are not party to this agreement. It does not safeguard our security, close quote, he said. Well, Zionist terrorists should not be safeguarded nor feel secure. That's international law. What's the international reaction? The deal has been welcomed by numerous nations worldwide. The UK, France, Germany, and Italy have expressed readiness to lift the sanctions on Iran following concrete steps to curb its nuclear program. And while you're at it, lift your U.S. sanctioned genocidal clutches to the last Ukrainian from Ukraine. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has expressed hope that the deal will actually come to fruition. Long-time diplomat knows exactly what's going on right there. He hopes it'll come to fruition. Well, we hope that the encouraging statements that were made this morning in Washington, Tehran, and Pakistan as a country mediating negotiations will materialize, he said on Monday. Yep, no mention of the inclusion of the Zionist terrorists from him either. And also absent in all this discussion, what happened to protecting Gaza? What happened to Iran saying that they wanted to protect Gaza? This I've noticed is just a silence, a deafening roar. But that's not what's on the table right now, so we'll just continue. A similar message was communicated by the Chinese Foreign Ministry, which said Beijing hopes, quote, all parties to stick to the path of peace and solve issues through dialogue, close quote. And Trump praised Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping for their mediating roles in settling the conflict. Again, it's a family affair globally. So now, can we trust Trump wasn't fibbing when he said that? That might be the most important progress during the entire cluster fiasco that we've been watching. And fresh off the Acme BTW teletype, and speaking of an undeniable flip-flopper in chief, hold the presses. U.S. postpones Vance's Switzerland trip. Iran signing ceremony off for now. Yeah, because Israel won't stop attacking Lebanon. And Iran said it isn't going to honor any MOU or participate further if Israel does not stop attacking Lebanon. And Netanyahu isn't interested in anything short of a regional genocide. And Trump, don't call no shots, even though if he were a strong non-loser commander-in-chief, he could, but won't. That's why Taco Tuesday came early, didn't it? U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance will not travel to Switzerland on Friday from the planned signing of a Memorandum of Understanding with Iran. A White House spokesperson said, citing unresolved logistical issues. The signing ceremony was scheduled for Friday in Switzerland, but Trump signed the memorandum with Iran a day earlier during a dinner at Versailles. But, quote, the plans for the upcoming technical talks have not been finalized, and the U.S. delegation has been prepared to depart at the first available opportunity, close quote, the spokesperson said in a statement. Quote, but the logistics of these negotiations have never been simple or predictable, close quote. Again, they're talking about Iran saying they're not showing up. Not to the signing. That was already done the night before. We're going to skip the ceremony. We're going to have you sign. He signed. He signed. Now the technical meeting. Well, they're not going to happen. Not yet. Because Trump hasn't got Netanyahu under control yet. J.D. Vance is expected to represent the American delegation at the meeting in Switzerland. A White House spokesperson announced on Thursday that Vance was not departing for Switzerland. On Sunday, Iran and the United States confirmed that the work on a memorandum of understanding had been completed. Overnight into June 18th, Iran and the United States remotely signed the document that provides for an end to the military conflict that began on February 28th. So, looks like the MOU stopping the war is a roadmap to nowhere. Not even a trail blazed. What do the American people get for Operation Epic Fubar, the war to nowhere? More of that big sucking sound. Pentagon requests $80 billion, bravo, dollars from Congress to recover costs after operation in Iran. After. over 100 billion wasn't enough. They were there to come back, asked for another 80 billion. Deputy Defense Secretary Stephen Feinberg voiced the military's financial needs during a phone conversation with U.S. Congressman this week. In addition, the Pentagon leadership has warned that they may start running out of funds for operations this summer if Congress fails to pass a new military spending bill. Maybe the reason Trump had to capitulate to Iran? The Pentagon's budget for the current 2026 fiscal year is about $1 trillion, $1 tango. The U.S. Department of War has asked the U.S. Congress to allocate additional $80 billion Bravo dollars to cover expenses related to operation in Iran. And get this, as well as other costs, the Wall Street Journal reported. $1 trillion wasn't enough of an insult to we the people. They're going to ask for a couple more. This is rather historic geopolitical press that's been going on with this issue here. Trump made a deal out of desperation. The Iranian supreme leader says Tehran will not submit to any, quote, excessive demands, close quote, by Washington during future talks. Ayatollah Mojtaba Khamenei has said, desperation indeed, it seems to me, no funding for his big, beautiful military. Trump has no cards, nowhere. U.S. President Donald Trump pushed for a memorandum of understanding with Iran because he found himself in a dire situation, the Islamic Republic Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei has said. The 14-point document was signed remotely by Trump and Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian late on Wednesday and entered force with immediate effect, according to Pakistani mediators. On Wednesday, Tehran previously said that, this show, this promotion, all this bluster that goes on by Trump, it was just words, nothing, no threats, no nothing was going on. It was done already Wednesday, before all the formalities. It was understood that way. Tehran previously said the MOU envisions a series of concessions by Washington, including the lifting of the U.S. naval blockade of Iran, sanction waivers for Tehran's oil exports and access to frozen Iranian funds, and a U.S.-backed economic reconstruction plan to the tune of at least $300 billion Bravo dollars. U.S.-backed economic reconstruction plan. On Thursday, Khamenei commented on the signing of the agreement, stressing in a statement that it was, quote, the U.S. president who, out of desperation, resorted to various means to bring about this outcome, close quote. Khamenei noted that he initially had, quote, a different view, close quote, regarding the need for diplomacy with Washington, but, quote, granted permission, close quote, for the deal to go ahead as Pezeshkian assured him that he will be able to safeguard Tehran's interests during future talks. To me, that's very impressive. Iran was done with talking. The MOU almost didn't get going. President Pezeshkian must be a very trusted man to persuade the Islamic Republic's supreme leader, Khamenei, to change his mind. Khamenei was apparently willing to abandon diplomacy and finish the job militarily. That would also anticipate Netanyahu going nuclear as that began to be bandied about in the Newstis. Consider how close this was again. The MOU launches a 60-day negotiation period during which Washington and Tehran are expected to discuss Iran's nuclear program. According to the Supreme Leader, Pezeshkian also, quote, stated explicitly that if the American side seeks excessive demands, they, the Tehran negotiators, will not submit to them, close quote. Quote, for this moment, we, the proud nation of Iran, and I, your humble servant, will await the fulfillment of the conditions that have been stated, close quote, Khamenei wrote. Iran's top negotiator, Mohammad Bajer Khalibaf, praised the supreme leader's, quote, wise and path-clearing message, close quote, saying on Friday that the signing of the MOU in Washington, it made clear that Tehran, quote, only reached the beginning of a difficult and winding path, close quote, towards settling this conflict. Yep, didn't I just say that? Path-clearing message, the roadmap to nowhere, not even a trail blazed yet. Trump had earlier slammed critics of the MOU who claimed that it contain too many concessions to Iran as being, quote, jealous, bad people, or stupid, close quote. Seems to me he also was very critical of those of us that told him that he should make that deal, but he now says it's very cool now. He also warned that if Tehran doesn't honor its obligations under the deal, quote, we'll probably go back to bombing them until they honor it, close quote. Russia welcomed the signing of the MOU, saying, quote, it is highly important that all parties involved in the armed conflict do not allow a renewed dangerous escalation, close quote, which is going to be very hard with someone like the Mar-a-Lago Mauler, don't you think? Russia also expressing hope that traffic through the Strait of Hormuz would return to its pre-war levels, decreasing the volatility of global oil and food markets. Yep, all caused by Trump and the losers he admittedly surrounds himself with. And also looking to the future, where the Zionist political movement could not confine its bloodthirst to a kinder and gentler genocide, who Trump going to call to further the greater Zionist project? Trump's New World Order is us, not Israel, to take out Hezbollah. Syria could deal with Hezbollah without killing everybody, like Israel, said Trump. The conflict in Lebanon has taken West Jerusalem far too long and cost too many lives, the U.S. president has said. Syria would do a, quote, better job, close quote, fighting the Lebanon-based militant group Hezbollah than Israel without, quote, killing everyone else, close quote. U.S. President Donald Trump suggested on Tuesday in a rare public criticism of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government. Well, before we run too fast up that extremist flagpole, Hezbollah are citizens of Lebanon, defending themselves from an invading occupying force, because the Lebanese government won't. Israel sent its troops into southern Lebanon to fight Hezbollah in the wake of the U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran. Despite a supposed ceasefire, and with Iran making an end to the war in Lebanon, one of its key demands in negotiating with the U.S., the Israeli onslaught in the country continues and has even gained momentum in recent weeks. Trump lamented Israel's approach to the conflict, including its routine aerial attacks on densely populated areas. Can we say war crime again? War crime. Let's say it together. War crime. Densely populated areas, suggesting that neighboring Syria could do a, quote, better job, close quote, against the group. Quote, Israel is fighting Hezbollah for too long and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody. Because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, close quote, Trump stated while speaking to the media amid the G7 summit, which is underway in Geneva. I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah. Trump proceeded to shower praise on the former leader of the al-Qaeda offshoot, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, and Syria's interim president, Ahmed al-Sharaa, calling him a, quote, very capable, close quote, leader who, quote, protected everything that I've asked for, close quote. That's right, admitting it is us the entire time. Go back to my broadcast, the blogcasters. I've talked all about that years and years ago. Hezbollah backed Syria former President Bashar al-Assad during the decades-long civil war, fighting the assorted jihadist groups that now comprise the core of the country's military and security forces. During the conflict, Israel repeatedly bombed Syria, attacking almost exclusively pro-Assad forces, inciting the Iranian presence as justification and giving aid and comfort and medical care to the ISIS group. After the Assad government fell in December 2024, West Jerusalem subjected the country to an extensive bombing campaign targeting assets left behind by the collapsed military in an effort to prevent the victorious jihadists from seizing its entire inventory. Its forces also occupied part of the country, including the strategic high-altitude summit of Mount Hermon. And from the peanut gallery in the synagogue of Satan, Trump has sold us out. Israelis react with anger and anxiety to new Iran deal as Washington and Tehran prepare to sign a historic peace agreement. Now, was it? See, folks, you've got to keep up with this. This is very important. International law, why I focus on it, very important to keep track of the steps. Is it a peace agreement? They've admitted it wasn't. They've admitted it's a roadmap to resolving a conflict. Then we find out they haven't even blazed the trail yet. As Washington and Tehran prepare to sign a historic peace agreement, many Israelis fear the deal preserves Iran's military power and sets the stage for the next war. Iranian military power is beyond the right of any Israeli to criticize, though. Certainly where no scrutiny of Israel's nuclear weapons and capabilities is accepted. After more than 3.5 months of fighting and intense back-and-forth negotiations, U.S. President Donald Trump announced that Washington and Tehran, under Pakistani mediation, have reached a final agreement to end hostilities between them. But it's only a roadmap to do that. It's an agreement to stop hostilities for what? 60 days, temporarily. According to reports, a memorandum of understanding stipulates that upon signing, both sides will declare an immediate, complete, and permanent end to all hostilities across the region, including in Lebanon. Except Trump says he'll go back and bomb them on their heads if he doesn't like what he hears. The blockade on Iran would be lifted. Washington would commit not to interfere in Iran's domestic affairs. Why is that even in there? Tells you Israelis and the CIA is involved in their country. And so there's a whole other story that's not being told, at least here. They would refrain from increasing troop levels in the region and release half of Iran's frozen assets, an amount totaling approximately $12 billion Bravo dollars. In exchange, Iran would reaffirm its commitment to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and confirm that it will never produce, develop, or acquire nuclear weapons. Right. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty now due Israel. And remember, Iran was already honoring that. So Iran's not losing anything. There's nothing new on Iran in any of this. Tehran would also reopen the Strait of Hormuz to a commercial maritime traffic within 30 days, according to arrangements specified by Iran. Israel has not taken the news lightly. Opposition leader Yair Lapid said that the emerging agreement achieves, quote, none of Israel's goals, close quote. And let me just remind y'all, if you're not keeping up, Israel is not a party. Mr. Lapid, Israel's not a party. The regime survives, the missile program remains intact, and Iran retains the ability to rebuild its nuclear program, which is their sovereign right without your input, Mr. Lapid. This is a complete failure by Netanyahu, and in the process, he is turning Israel into a client state that takes orders on matters of its own national security, close quote. Well, maybe not becoming an illegal genocidal belligerent occupier that recognized international norms would be helpful to you then, you think? Another opposition figure, Yair Golan, was equally blunt, describing the policy as a failure. So now we're looking at the Israeli political scene, and Trump is setting up the takedown of Netanyahu the way this is all working out. Quote, Trump is signing an agreement that funnels billions of dollars to the Ayatollah's regime. It's their money, folks. Leaves the nuclear infrastructure intact, preserves ballistic threat as it is, and throws a lifeline to the murderous regime in Tehran, so says the genocidal maniacs. Now, I haven't seen Iran committing the extermination of a people to steal their land. Have you? But the frustration is not limited to politicians. Conversations with ordinary Israelis paint a picture of disappointment, anxiety, and a growing sense that a historic opportunity may have been squandered. Now, where can I read this historic opportunity provided to commit genocide? Where is that written? Certainly this psychopathy is not just the government, but resides in the people themselves, which their government faithfully represents the democracy they say they be. Moore Cohen, a 37-year-old resident of Tel Aviv, believes the agreement has missed a chance, quote, to finish the job, close quote. Now, I suppose finish the job means genocide for Iranians, too. Quote, this deal essentially guarantees another war in the future because everything that mattered to Israel was left unaddressed and the issues that concern us most remain unresolved, close quote. Her concerns are not without basis. According to estimates, before the war, Iran possessed roughly 3,000 missiles, including long-range systems capable of traveling up to 2,000 kilometers. Although the conflict reportedly cut the arsenal in half, the remaining 1,500 missiles still represent a serious threat to Israel. Nor have the Israelis' nuclear concerns been fully addressed. But the concerns of the world regarding Israel also have not been addressed. While Washington repeatedly insisted that Iran, quote, never have nuclear weapons, close quote, it offered no concrete guarantees to Israel. I wonder why. I wonder what they knew. Nor did American officials directly address the issues of Iran's regional proxies, namely Hezbollah in the north and the Houthis in the south, both of which continue to challenge Israel through sporadic rocket and drone attacks. Quote, the general feeling on the street is that Trump has sold us out, close quote, says Mayor Atias, a 56-year-old resident of Haifa. Quote, Americans simply don't understand the Middle East. Iran fed them a narrative, and they bought it, either because they genuinely believed it or because they were tired of dealing with the conflict. Midterm elections are coming up, and politicians need the support of their voters. That's what it's all about, he. In this equation, Israel sits at the bottom of the priority list, close quote. Moore shares the assessment, arguing that American foreign policy is ultimately driven by interests rather than alliances. Quote, Trump has his own agenda. Today, old Nick Deer has his own agenda. We believe that with the Epstein class? Really? Trump has his own agenda. Today, he may be Netanyahu's best friend. Tomorrow, he could be Kim Jong-un's best friend, if that serves his interests. It all depends on what benefits him personally and politically, close quote. For many Israelis, such fears are reinforced by past examples. In 2021, thousands of Afghans who worked alongside U.S. forces as interpreters, guides, and governmental partners were left behind during America's withdrawal from Afghanistan. Many later faced retaliation from the Taliban, prompting criticisms from veterans, lawmakers, and policy analysts. 2 years earlier, in 2019, Trump ordered U.S. troops to pull back from parts of northern Syria, paving the way for Turkish military operations against Kurdish forces that had served as Washington's primary ground partner in the fight against ISIS, which was IS-US, which is now ruling the country, with Trump's help, and requesting of protection and getting it. Except those extensive Zionist agents also that are IS-US and working there as well still. Now running here to Syria, as we just read. Not easy prey. That sense of abandonment came at the heavy cost of both the Kurds and the Afghans, yet Moore and Mayor believe Israel, unlike those allies, would not be easy prey. Quote, we are well-equipped, highly trained, and determined to survive, close quote, Mayor said. Quote, with or without American support, we will remain resilient and do whatever is necessary to defend ourselves, close quote. Moore agrees, and I'm wondering what their comment is about then. What's their concern? Quote, the reality is that Israel may ultimately have to finish the job on its own, whether in Lebanon or Iran. Our security must remain the top priority regardless of whether Trump approves, close quote. Those sentiments come as earlier today, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz issued a written statement signaling that Western Jerusalem is prepared to respond forcefully if Iran intervenes in any future confrontation involving Hezbollah. Quote, we will not compromise on Israel's supreme security interests or the protection of our citizens, and we will not withdraw from security zones, close quote, the statement said. Quote, if Iran attacks Israel because of events in Lebanon, we will strike it with full force and clearly demonstrate the disparity in power between us, close quote, it concluded. Whether Israel would have the freedom to act independently, however, remains an open question. Israel is the largest recipient of American military assistance, and any serious rift with Washington could carry significant consequences. We can only hope, folks. During the Gaza war, President Joe Biden temporarily paused shipments of certain heavy munitions, including 2,000-pound bombs, over concerns regarding civilian casualties in densely populated areas. Trump could choose a similar course if Israel acts against Washington's wishes. Not everyone, however, sees the agreement as a strategic defeat. For some Israelis, the prospect of avoiding another large-scale conflict outweighs the concerns surrounding the deal. Simply unsustainable. Lilach Calderon, a 40-year-old mother of three, says that the war with Iran has taken a severe emotional toll on ordinary families. Quote, the war with Iran is deeply traumatic, especially for families like mine. My husband serves in the reserves, and worrying about his safety kept me awake night after night. When we heard about the agreement, our family felt genuine relief because it means lives may be spared and soldiers will not be forced to spend 50 or more consecutive days serving across multiple fronts, close quote. She paused before adding, quote, for a small country of 10 million people, that kind of burden is simply unsustainable, close quote. Remember that comment. Some experts are equally unconvinced that Israel could sustain a prolonged military campaign even if it chose to act independently. And I think we saw the myth in the 12-day Iranian pummeling of the Zionist strongholds. Satan Yehu crying, Uncle, Uncle Sam. Amir Oren, one of Israel's veteran military and security analysts, argues that the country's ability to wage a long war against either Iran or Hezbollah is constrained by both strategic and political realities. Quote, in the case of Iran, obviously regime change is not achievable, as assassinations did not have the desired effect and no revolution ensued. Trump's major failure in not seeing that would be the case when he got into this. Before, actually. Destroying the nuclear targets proved to have some effect, but not for long. Ditto ballistic missile infrastructure. Therefore, short of an emergency surgical operation against an existential peril, such as a nuclear-tipped missile ready to be launched, a campaign would not be sustainable with domestic support quickly denied the government if headed by the untrustworthy Satan Yehu. Quote, as for Lebanon, there is a constant public outcry at the harassment Hezbollah manages to present to Galilee's communities, and there is a demand that the government do away with Iran-backed Shiite terror organization, but this is a far easier said than done. And what is that caused by but Israel's genocide of the Palestinians? Short of a full occupation of Lebanon, which neither the Israeli public nor a global or Arab power will support, Hezbollah will be able to regroup and rocket from areas outside of Beirut and South Lebanon. A diplomatic arrangement mobilizing the moderate government of Lebanon against Hezbollah seems like an optimal way out of the crisis. As I said, Hezbollah exists because the Lebanese government does not protect the people. Quote, the IDF is deployed properly and on alert, having learned the terrible lessons of October 7th, will always be able to defend Israel proper, but as for offensive operations, attrition wars, or causality-ridden campaigns, there is little to suggest that they would be sustainable. But let's go back and look at that October 7th. That was the cannibal protocol executed by Israel, killing their own people. So when you turn into the facts of this, you turn this thing inside out, what are they really talking about? Again, we're back to bloodthirst, genocide, protecting that from people that have no right of self-defense. International law, folks, not even coming for me. I just read it and kind of retell it to you. Hope people go look for it. I think people had an underlying foundation in this. You'd see real quickly what we call it, the Kabuki theater. We call it bloviating. You just see it come right pouring out of these people. It's a waste of everyone's time. It's dangerous. It kills. Insiders make profits. Your life gets worse. And if we could see this more instantaneously, I think we'd be better people for sure. I think we'd have a different type of nation, the one that could aspire where it was supposed to go, at least here in the United States. And I think we're watching a very good diplomatic lesson, geopolitical lesson from Iran about all this myself. Whether or not I understand any brutality about their government is not what I'm talking about. It's how to avoid, have people be, at least begin to be free, and maybe then we can look in later when everybody's has a decent life established. However, the oppression of any government, and every government, seems to come down on us. As diplomats prepare to gather in Geneva, the agreement may have succeeded in stopping a war. Whether it has secured a lasting peace or merely postponed the next conflict remains a question that hangs heavily over Israel. Well, just stop fighting everybody. I think that would go to a large extent to helping you. But you won't. The bloodthirsty people that you are. One thing is certain. While the guns may be falling silent, the battle over what this deal means for Israel's future has only just begun. Kind of like the trail blazing we've heard, right? Just begun. Just path clearing, right? Very interesting how far down the beginning of this journey they really, really are. And Trump is saying war over. But whatever the noise is coming from the synagogue of Satan, U.S. must rein in Israel or Iran peace deal is doomed, warns an analyst. A potential U.S.-Iran peace deal could be derailed by Israel unless Washington takes firm control of its Middle East ally, veteran war correspondent and political analyst Elijah J. Magnier told Sputnik. Looking after Israel will be a difficult task for Trump now that Iran has accepted concessions from the U.S. and mediators. Under the terms of the Memorandum of Understanding, Iran will bomb Israel immediately in the event of any violation, Magnier explained. He warned that if Israel violates it, quote, that will be a sabotage directed toward Trump, and it's up to the Americans to deal with, close quote, the situation. This memorandum is, quote, the beginning of U.S.-Iran negotiations rather than a peace deal, even if it imposes the end of the war on all fronts, close quote. Iranian Prime Minister Netanyahu earlier made it clear the IDF troops will not withdraw from Lebanon as part of the U.S.-Iran peace deal. But Netanyahu is a terrorist. And I thought we weren't supposed to negotiate with terrorists, and we were supposed to eliminate them. But that aside, there is no peace deal, is there? It's not a deal at all. It's only a framework for an agreement. A roadmap to a peace agreement, not the agreement itself, right? That's correct. It's merely a roadmap delineating a highway paved with good intentions, the liar in chief aside, the eventual destination of which may be thwarted by bandits, pirates, Zionists, and other terrorists. Did I repeat myself there again? This is BTWRLM 673. But Vance came out to throw a reality check to the body. Israel can't kill its way out of every crisis, he says. And Netanyahu responded with, hold my beer. PM Benjamin Netanyahu has refused to withdraw troops from Lebanon despite a U.S.-Iran agreement, the VP said, blocking the Zionists into the bleachers. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance has criticized Israeli hardliners opposed to U.S. President Donald Trump's Iran deal, warning that the country cannot kill its way out of every security problem. Vance's comments came as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Milikowski refused to withdraw troops from the country's northern neighbor, so neighborly, folks, despite a newly signed U.S.-Iran Memorandum of Understanding that calls for the end of hostilities on all fronts, including Lebanon. Where is Gaza here? Quote, what is your exact proposal? Vance told the New York Times on Thursday, responding to Israel hardliners critical of the agreement. Quote, you're a country of 9 million people. You can't just kill your way out of solving every single national security problem that you have, close quote. So Vance says there's only 9. The woman in Israel says there's 10. Guess what's 1 million people between friends? Vance urged Israel to give diplomacy a chance. Give peace a chance. Give diplomacy a chance and show, quote, a little bit of credit, close quote, to Washington, and warned Israel officials against publicly attacking Trump over the deal, saying the U.S. president remains one of the country's few reliable supporters. Netanyahu, however, has insisted that Israeli troops will remain in the southern Lebanon for as long as Israel deems necessary. Quote, we will restore security to the north, close quote, he said on Thursday, arguing that this is required maintaining a, quote, security strip, close quote, in southern Lebanon. In southern Lebanon. But the security strip goes on the inside of your country, not outside, like, you know, North and South Korea. But as an illegal occupier, you claim no lawful territory, so try to illegally occupy it all. Shortly before Netanyahu remarks, the IDF published a new map showing an occupied area extending roughly 10 kilometers into Lebanese territory. Defense Minister Israel Katz previously said Israeli forces would remain in Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza for as long as necessary. The stance puts Netanyahu at odds with the U.S.-Iran memorandum, which calls for an immediate and permanent end to military operations on all fronts and includes explicit language on respecting Lebanon's sovereignty and territorial integrity, which is in the international law. Territorial integrity. Same thing happening over that Russia was stepping in to protect in the Ukraine. But maybe the flip-flopper in chief is wearing on Netanyahu. A bloodthirsty welfare queen, war-criming extraterritorially, can't be too demanding, it seems. Israel and Hezbollah appear to have a deal. U.S. and Iran reportedly helped broker a truce to stop fighting in Lebanon. The biggest immediate hurdle in the U.S.-Iran deal appears to have gotten a little smaller. Multiple outlets report that Israel and Hezbollah have agreed to a renewed ceasefire, yet again, in Lebanon, to take effect later Friday. The reports cite anonymous U.S. officials and diplomats and officials in Jerusalem have not yet confirmed. So, is it fake news that Trump does agree with? Time will tell. The truce was reportedly brokered by the U.S., Qatar, and Iran. Earlier, Iran denounced a new Israeli bombardment and warned that any deal with Washington depends on quiet in Lebanon, referencing the first clause of an initial framework with the U.S. The flare-up has already disrupted diplomacy. Vice President J.D. Vance delayed a planned trip to Switzerland for technical talks with Tehran, as Iran pushed for assurance that Lebanon front would calm. So get what they just did there. J.D. Vance is going for the technical talks. Remember all that rigmarole they were going through about it was signed, not signed, oh, it's signed, oh, digitally signed, one side signed the night before, at dinner, not going to be on, okay. What Vance is going to Switzerland about is the technical talks that agreement were focused on. Vance has faulted Israel's campaign for putting the fragile negotiations at risk, saying, you're a country of 9 million people. You can't just kill your way out of solving every single national security problem that you have, close quote. Okay, now do Gaza. Why is that so hard, folks? Why is that so hard? And so, despite all the peace promotions of a deal that isn't for a war that doesn't exist, the calm in Hormuz could be dangerously brief. The latest U.S.-Iran deal announced on Sunday evening looks less like a peace than a pause before the next crisis. The news, which pushed oil prices down by 4%, appeared at first glance like a triumph of diplomacy. The U.S. and Iran had agreed to end the latest phase of their confrontation and reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Donald Trump, never one to miss the dramatic flourish, I guess that's what we can call it that, the dramatic flourish, immediately declared on Truth Social, quote, ships of the world, start your engines, let the oil flow, close quote. Thought it was already open. But anyone looking beyond the market reaction can see the barrels of black gold still have to pass through a minefield. Yes, this is the most significant diplomatic breakthrough since joint U.S. and Israeli strikes in Iran in February triggered a conflict that killed thousands and shook global energy markets. Yes, the Strait of Hormuz, blocked by Iran for months, is expected to reopen on Friday. But this agreement is not a final peace deal. Again, if you're not getting it from the guy behind the woodshed, maybe take it from these other folks. We're all saying the same thing from the early news about what was going on. Despite what Trump was saying, despite what he was promoting, the central problem remains Iran's nuclear program. Its future has been deferred for a 60-day period of, quote, further negotiations, close quote. While Tehran has already accumulated more than 400 kilograms of uranium close to weapons grade, Trump has abandoned the 2015 nuclear deal negotiated under Barack Obama, is now being forced back to the table under worse conditions. That creates an obvious political trap because Republican hawks have already warned that any nuclear agreement will have to be put before Congress. Trump, therefore, risks either being accused of weakness or seeing the whole arrangement collapse before November's midterm elections. I mean, risks being accused of being weak. I think I just did it on the broadcast and last episode and the episode before that and giving the reason why. This is not really hard to figure out. This never has been. The second danger is Israel. So I said before, maybe this is a political hit on Netanyahu. Take him out. Maybe you don't have the problem anymore. So watch this chess game going. Trump may be playing better chess for Israel than he is for us. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Malachowski and Defense Minister Israel Katz have made clear that the Israeli army will remain in, quote, security zones, close quote, Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza for an indefinite period. Katz has already warned that if Iran attacks Israel over events in Lebanon, Israel will respond, quote, with full force. Iran, meanwhile, has made a complete ceasefire in Lebanon one of the core demands, and that turns Lebanon into a powder keg capable of exploding, regardless of any grand bargain between Washington and Tehran. Markets may also have moved too fast. ITC markets analyst Sean Callow was right to warn that the lack of detail, especially on freedom of navigation, is worrying. Investors rush to sell oil, but what happens if tankers again encounter Iranian patrol boats next week? A sudden price fall can be as destabilizing as a surge. Still, the deal has a foundation because Trump needs lower gas prices before the midterms. Iran needs sanctions relief and the unfreezing of $25 billion, Bravo dollars, in assets. Western Europe states, led by Brussels, London, Berlin, Paris, and Rome, are already promising sanctions relief in exchange for, quote, verifiable steps on the nuclear file. The real question is whether this fragile structure can last 60 days, because in the Middle East, silence in the Strait could turn out to be just the calm before a new storm. Guaranteed by Netanyahu, I suppose. Why the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran failed. Failed. Trump and Yehu and Congress failed. Are failures, losers, on the world stage, all avoidable. And if and you've listened for any time behind the woodshed, you'll know this is not Monday morning armchair quarterbacking. This failure was predictable. And not much different than predicting the loss in the Ukraine in the opening economic salvo by the U.S. I explained it the weekend it started. I explained it when I got to the broadcast. All the wrong principles and positioning. The only question lingering surrounding Iran, since it had never proven itself, was Iran exaggerating its capabilities in the face of an incessant promotion of the United States' full-spectrum dominance, also known as full spectrum superiority. Tehran just showed why military supremacy no longer guarantees political victory. The war waged by the United States and Israel against Iran deserves a place in contemporary international relations textbooks. As I said, I think this one's one for the history books. Not because it overturns everything we know about power, but because it shows how the use of power is changing. Classical approaches to relationships between states still matter, and the balance of power hasn't disappeared. Military superiority still counts, but the consequences of using force have become less predictable than before because coercion no longer produces linear outcomes. As I've observed for many years behind the woodshed, the time has come for the nations of the world to say enough is enough and mean it and impose it. However perceivably capable. And they started to do that with the BRICS, with the encouragement of Russia. And I've reported on all of that. That whole dynamic, while it was going, building up and building into it, as I was explaining what Russia and China would do with gold, getting that set up as they moved it into it. But remember, It's not moving away from the digitization system, the global financial system digitized, the digital token citizenship. That's what they're not getting rid of. This applies not only to direct military intervention, as in the case of Iran, but also to sanctions and other forms of pressure. If one strips away the rhetoric, which all sides require for domestic reasons, the picture is straightforward. And I'd like you to listen to that. When you strip away the rhetoric, which all sides require for domestic consumption, cut that loose and start looking at what's going on. You start to get much quicker appreciation for the realities that are moving on it. And as we're talking Trump, his midterms, you got to get rid of all that noise. And he identifies that right there. If one strips away the rhetoric, which all sides require for domestic reasons, the picture is straightforward. The coalition that was clearly stronger consists of the U.S., Israel, and the Arab Gulf states failed to achieve the objectives it set for itself when it launched a military campaign against a clearly weaker adversary. Iran and its allied groups in the region, with likely limited support from Russia and China. Aim was to deliver a swift, crushing blow to a regime considered weakened by external pressure and internal divisions. Donald Trump's demand for, quote, unconditional surrender, close quote, captured the mood perfectly, as the assumption was that Tehran would buckle under the pressure. Yeah, but we all know about Assumi, right? And so went Trumpenstein. The assumption was that Tehran would buckle under the pressure. The opposite happened. The attacking side's superior forces were met with unexpectedly high resilience. Iran didn't collapse after the initial decapitation strike, and instead it reorganized, mobilized, and most importantly cast aside many of the constraints that have previously limited its response. This is where one of the defining features of the new era came into view, as asymmetrical counteraction. Iran couldn't match the U.S. and Israel in conventional strength, but it didn't need to because it used the tools available to it in ways that offset many of the enemy's advantage. If you think I'm reading about over there, I'm talking about you folks at home within America. Read what this guy is saying and watch how this got played out. And start considering your situation. I'm seeing this right in the situation I'm sitting in right and dealing with the last couple of years. It speaks to conflict, and it speaks to how you have to asymmetrically counteract. You have to figure out what all that is. First, it moved to close the strategically vital Strait of Hormuz, something it had long threatened but never before dared to. Never before, until enough was enough. Second, it struck not only American targets in the region, but also the assets of key U.S. partners. Third, it relied on large weapon stockpiles, which, although inferior to those in the U.S. and Israel, were sufficient to inflict serious damage on countries unused to absorbing such blows. U.S. and Israel, and meaning conjunctive, right? Not either, one in the same, tied at the pocketbook. Through Zionist compromised Congress critters funding appropriations, right? Fourth, Iran demonstrated a tolerance for damage substantially higher than that of its enemies. The current outcome speaks for itself, as none of the issues over which the U.S. and Israel went to war has been resolved. Everything has once again been deferred to future negotiations, and everyone understands that negotiations, in the tradition of Persian diplomacy, means tenacity and patience. And as I've said before, for Russia, it'll progress at the speed of diplomacy. In essence, after an intense armed conflict that threw the whole world into turmoil, the status quo that had been destroyed at the beginning of the war was simply been restored. And what did a barrel of turmoil peak at? I haven't seen yet. The Strait of Hormuz is to be reopened to shipping, although even the conditions for that remain unclear, as both sides interpret them differently, predicting the roadmap to peace designated a very bumpy, if not impassable, path. The experience of recent years shows that the scope for achieving political objectives through military force is narrowing. The weaker side's capacity to resist is growing, while the stronger side's willingness to accept serious risk, especially risks to its own domestic stability, is diminishing. This applies to many conflicts, but it is particularly visible in the Middle East. The broader political consequence is the relative weakening of the dominant power in the shape of the U.S. Trump has shown that he is deeply reluctant to become embroiled in another full-scale military confrontation, having failed to achieve his objectives in a war he himself began. Failed is not a winner, no matter how many times winning is claimed. On one level, this is common sense, because he understands that another round would likely end as the first did, in a stalemate. Unlike old Nick Ear Trumpenstein, a successful commander-in-chief would have avoided any conflict that required a second round before he started a fight he couldn't finish. But disregarding that common sense appreciation, was it actually a stalemate? I think the author is being quite a bit generous regarding this cluster fiasco I explained early on being Operation Epic Fubar. And is it that Trump only understands now what was clear to anyone listening behind the woodshed as this sordid affair and Epstein class distraction began? Given it doesn't seem to impress anyone that Epstein files offers evidence of victim investigational testimony witnessing that Trump raped, beat, and abused children, is the actual compromise Trump is concerned about that Satan Yehu will put out the video evidence of old Nick Ear using Butler, Pennsylvania, Main Event Entertainment, and Zionist bloodlust ritual to dupe the American people, to swing the election in his favor, and therefore the Zionists' favor? Would being shown that Butler assassination Showtime event was a WWF-style live fire performance theater spectacle be enough? That's what it looked like to me. That's the most immediate, strongest impression. A WWF-style live fire performance, theater spectacle and extravaganza. The iconic picture, the icing on the let them eat cake. Is there anything that will be enough for we the people to respond to the overthrow? Ongoing of the American Republic? But on another level, it sends a signal to everyone else that the U.S. is no longer willing to take unnecessary risks simply to preserve prestige and maintain dominance. Willing? Or now shown unable to preserve prestige and maintain dominance. I think this let them eat chaos president shamefully, disgracefully destroyed any prestige the U.S. had left. And this discussion is observing that pure military might, superiority, does not maintain dominance. Its partners must still account for American power, but they can no longer assume that Washington will always carry the ultimate burden for them. This is a global phenomenon, not merely a Middle Eastern one. It's especially visible in the region, but the same logic applies elsewhere. Globally, elsewhere. Yes, global to local. Right to where you live. As I said, take notes on this. You against a full-spectrum, dominant, soon-to-be AI-enhanced government, and how you might respond with asymmetric counteraction to its aggressions, using Iran to provide some pro tips. It is too early to say what this will mean in the medium term, but the entire Middle East framework, the construction of which began during Trump's first term, has been shaken. That framework was based on the gradual reconciliation of Israel with its Arab neighbors, especially the wealthy Gulf states, and it rested on financial interdependence, technological cooperation, and the marginalization of Iran and its allied groups. The strategy suffered a serious blow in 2023 when Hamas attacked Israel and Israel responded with massive force. Even Gaza, however, didn't completely derail the project, but merely delayed it. The war against Iran was meant to settle the matter more decisively, and it was intended to reshape the region permanently under Israeli military supremacy, creating a new balance of power under U.S. patronage. But the failure to remove Iran from the equation has thrown a spanner in the works. The current phase of the conflict has resolved nothing, which means further attempts to settle these questions by force are likely, but they will take place under less favorable conditions for Israel and the U.S. The relative failure of Washington and the relative success of Tehran, though the damage inflicted on Iran should not be underestimated, are shifting the balance in Iran's favor. Much now depends on how Iran's renewed and younger leadership, brought to the fore in part by Israel's own actions, chooses to capitalize on this moment. And we heard that the Ayatollah wasn't going to continue in diplomacy at all. And so we have some very interesting dynamics within this thing that are, I think, something to continue to watch. Little lessons, I think, worth watching in this change and this shift that's going on. The risk of further upheaval remains as no settlement has been reached and no stable regional order has emerged. But one conclusion is already clear. The age in which superior force could reliably produce the desired political outcome is passing, and wars are becoming more complex, their consequences less controllable, and their results less linear. The U.S. and Israel may possess overwhelming military power, but Iran has shown that this no longer guarantees victory. And another opinion piece coming to very similar conclusions, but notice this is written by someone like a Jeffrey D. Sachs in the U.S., who is the president of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network, co-chair of the Council of Engineers for the Energy Transition Commission of the UN Broadband Commission for Development, academician of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences at the Vatican for the fallible one, and Tansri Jeffrey Chi, honorary distinguished professor at Sunway University. He is also a university professor and director of the Center for Sustainable Development at Columbia University. He has been the special advisor to three United Nations Secretaries General and currently serves as the SDG advocate under Secretary General Antonio Guterres, or A. Kirill Dmitriev, a CEO of the Russian Direct Investment Fund, the economist speaking to the sustainable future that they want and the hidden whom Trump may be working to advance, as it seems he is Hades bound on onshoring the infrastructure of the beast, written by another Dmitry Trenin, a research professor at the Higher School of Economics and a lead research fellow at the Institute of World Economy and International Relations. He is also a president of the Russian International Affairs Council. These three are economic experts focused on sustainability, and the first to respond to refocus us on the sustainable development goals of the world from these ashes in Iran. Trump's Iran truce marks a defeat for American power. Washington's failed gamble shows how far the global balance of power has moved. This part of the Trump war on the world through Iran has not failed, though. If you've been following the multiple and subtle threads of the global action that I've been covering for years, this part did not fail. Why I'm bringing it up. What a difference a year makes. Last June, in the wake of the first joint Israeli-U.S. attack on Iran, a joke was making the rounds in the Middle East. It described a bartender welcoming an American, an Israeli, and an Iranian into the bar, offering them beers and saying, "Congratulations, gentlemen, you have all won." Not so this time. There's no question that there is only one winner in the second war against Iran, Iran. There are also multiple losers, including America and Israel. Make no mistake, a truce doesn't equal peace. Key issues are left for future talks, and there is no certainty that these will yield results or that any agreements will hold. What we are dealing with here and now is not just another Middle East conflict. Rather, this is part of an ongoing struggle in which the global hegemon seeks to reverse the trends reshaping the global order. The Middle East is a theater in what the Kabuki is a theater in what amounts to a world war alongside Eastern Europe, where the West is seeking to defeat Russia, and East Asia, where the U.S. and its allies are trying to contain China. This fight will continue. A new equilibrium is a long way off, and new battles are inevitable down the road. Don't even have a trail yet. That's why we know that. However, the consequences of even a provisional ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran are monumental and far-reaching. Above all, Iran has emerged from this war as a formidable regional power. That Washington, unable to crush it, has had to seek a reprieve only confirms Iran's enhanced status, and there's no talk anymore of regime change in Tehran or of any limitations on its ballistic missile arsenal or the elimination of the country's nuclear program, not to speak of abandoning Iran's regional allies. These were all the original goals of America and Israel on all those fronts. The attackers suffered a resounding defeat. In the short term, reopening the Strait of Hormuz and lifting of the U.S. naval blockade of Iran will ease the energy situation on the global market. Yet in the long term, the case of Hormuz has sent a ringing message that in the age of world order transition, all maritime choke points are potentially vulnerable to hostile action. Iranian leaders have learned that their ability to close the strait and the U.S. unwillingness to risk losses trying to reopen it, Washington's Achilles heel, could be a more powerful deterrent for Tehran than a nuclear weapons capability. Meanwhile, Tehran intends to regulate traffic through the waterway together with Oman. All this didn't happen before Trump got his big foot in the way. As for the nuclear program, Tehran will definitely continue it under a future comprehensive agreement with Washington if an agreement is indeed reached. And then Trump will go away, and then what will be reached? A failure to agree would leave Tehran free to pursue the program as before, because the Iranians won't surrender their nuclear materials to anyone. Regarding nuclear deterrence, however, the lessons from the recent war are mixed. On the one hand, America and Israel would probably not have attacked a nuclear-armed Iran. Look at North Korea. On the other hand, a nuclear-armed Israel, even under Iranian ballistic missile strikes, did not use nuclear weapons against Iran. Neither did the U.S. The option was reportedly discussed, but rejected. Again, nuclear glowing, folks. We could be there at any moment. A desperate Satan Yehu. Thus, for Iran, being able to close Hormuz may be more effective. In fact, it was stated by an American military assessment, the United States really cannot control the strait through the military power. Unfreezing Iranian assets held by the U.S. and lifting sanctions in Iran will probably become tools for America to influence Tehran's behavior. Again, behavioral control, what everyone's looking to do against us, even Iran or any other nation. Having lost the war, the U.S. won't leave Iran alone. It may have reason to hope that peacetime conditions will gradually mellow Iranian society, reveal the intra-elite fractures temporarily closed by the war, and allow the American room for manipulation. Setting up a fund to develop Iran's energy and logistical infrastructure looks like a further enticement for Iranians to move back into the Western financial system. So that's no different than Russia has been holding on to the SWIFT access that is in the end plan for the global financial system. For Iran, victory in the war must be safeguarded by domestic policies that strengthen the company's stability and improve the economy's performance. The situation in Lebanon, however, could be a real deal breaker. Tehran has succeeded in getting President Donald Trump's agreement to include the Lebanon front in the deal. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Milikowski is adamant that Israel continue its efforts to eliminate Hezbollah on the Greater Israel Project. Trump's recent anger directed at Netanyahu Milikowski reflects something much more important. A significant part of American society and the political class are losing patience with Israel and cooling toward it. That's for my listener. A significant part of American society. Be that noise, folks. Speak out about these unprincipled conditions in the world, from global to local. It's happening around you somewhere. This comes against the backdrop of Israel's growing international isolation. Indeed, Israel is the main loser from the war. Its new strategy of forcefully eliminating threats along all seven fronts, from Gaza, Lebanon, and Yemen to the West Bank, Syria, Iraq, and above all, Iran, promises forever wars rather than stability and security. Its unstated nuclear deterrence has failed to prevent Iran from lobbing missiles and drones at Israeli targets. In the foreseeable future, Israel faces an election in which dissatisfaction with Netanyahu and Milikowski will run against wide support for his radical policies. And that might already be happening, as I was mentioning slightly earlier in the broadcast, and maybe to Trump's credit, if so, with Trump's help. Out you go. The Arab states of the Persian Gulf have not fared well either. Their reliance on U.S. military bases as a security guarantee turned out to be a disastrous bargain. Instead of protecting the host countries, these bases acted like magnets attracting Iranian retaliatory strikes. The image of the Gulf nations as safe and comfortable places to do business has taken a big hit. If these nations are to recover, they will need to come up with a better security policy than aligning themselves with their failed protector. The failed protector-in-chief now? Be that as it may, the U.S.-Israel war on Iran is a landmark event in the global power transition. Again, I found all these articles. They were all speaking the same thoughts I had about really the historic nature of what's gone on. This is way beyond looking at rah-rah, your team wins. What's we were witnessing here if we were to watch it. And a lot of people are seeing it. I'm glad they're seeing it. I don't know that we're all seeing where this thing's going, but anyway, for right now, delineating what's going on in the Middle East and what Iran has done and the capitulation the United States had to do for whatever reason, it's been done. It's a big, gigantic transition. And I'm thinking it's moving toward that economic transformation. Why I've come to the economist parts and the sustainability. The declining global hegemon and its ally, the region's foremost military power, have been tried hard and failed to reverse the tide of the times. They lost an important battle, but this isn't the end of the world crisis. And of course not. They thrive in world crisis. To squoze the last barrel of turmoil out of y'all, to impose their new world order of let them eat chaos. Of course it's not over. And the economy, indeed, as with the sanctions against Russia in the U.S. regime change in the Ukraine, as Iran and your vote, Scott Ritter says, America's lost the Iran war, but Americans are being sold a victory. This is the Hormuz effect, the ultimate symbol of the decline of the American dream. Well, this perception management tactic precedes the current Hormuz debacles relative to that name, but partly why I disagree with some of Ritter's statements. But let's go with the name for now, the Hormuz effect. Or if it's helped to be a reminder, we the dupable people and your non-existent sound money exploitation system, soon to be digitally and AI enhanced, the Hormuz effect, after months of back and forth relations and finalized a memorandum of understanding, has been signed by U.S. President Donald Trump and his Iranian counterpart, Masoud Pezeshkian. The fighting stopped. The shipping will resume at Iranian ports and through the Strait of Hormuz. It is the last part that deserves more attention because the entire focus of the American effort during the negotiation period boiled down to getting oil flowing freely once again through this choke point. As James Carville famously noted during former U.S. President Bill Clinton's 1992 election, quote, it's the economy, stupid, close quote. The minutiae of foreign policy can drive those elites in power, but to remain in power, they need the support of the people on election day. And to get that support, they need to attend to affairs of the wallet. It's the economy, stupid. And what's really in your wallet, folks? The Israeli-driven military misadventure has ended in a strategic defeat for the United States. Misadventure, I think, is putting Operation Epic Fubar lightly. After 108 days needlessly costing American taxpayers over $100 billion, now to be requesting $80 billion Bravo dollars more, killing thousands and disrupting global energy markets to go essentially back to the future. The inescapable irony is that the principal negotiating position of the United States, the opening of the Strait of Hormuz, existed only because of this war. Well, not a war, though, right? That results currently in not a deal, right? Just the roadmap. Before the U.S. and Israel committed their combined act of perfidy back in February of this year, the Strait of Hormuz was open to all shipping, and there was no income-generating transit fees. The nuclear issue, on which so much emphasis was placed at the start of this war, has evaporated, replaced by token references to common sense. The U.S. blockade is likely dissipating. The MOU calls for it to be totally lifted in 30 days, along with the opening of the Strait of Hormuz, because Trump needs the oil to flow now. Because it's the economy, stupid. This is the Hormuz effect, the reality attached to the fact that Iran's control of the strategic waterway has empowered it like no nuclear weapon ever could. Iran will forever be positioned to squeeze the economic life out of the world, and there's nothing the U.S. military can do about it. While the rest of the world ponders the geopolitical consequence of American and Israeli imperial overreach, the resumption of the flow of oil out of the Persian Gulf is being touted as a masterstroke of U.S. diplomacy, the epitome of presidential leadership, and the result of American grit, determination, and military prowess. Of course, all this is being done to get the American economy and that of the world, since everything is interconnected these days, back on track. So that by September, some impressive economic growth and prosperity statistics can be generated for an American audience unable or unwilling to ask the obvious questions, such as, how is the return to an economic normal that existed prior to Trump's order the U.S. military to attack Iran considered good policy? Left unspoken will be the real economic cost of this war, the depletion of the U.S. arsenal of precision-guided munitions, and the excessive replacement costs of U.S. taxpayer will be called upon to bear, the billions of dollars in destroyed and damaged infrastructure throughout the Middle East, and the lives lost, those of American service members, a relatively small number, and those of the Iranian people, thousands, including 165 children murdered while attending the school in Menard. Let me go back up to where it talks about putting it on the precision-guided munitions that would be covered by the American taxpayers to replace. What if they don't? What if this is part of the global future setup to make all militaries equal? Again, careful who Trump might be working with. And if not, he might be helping them without knowing so. There is no time for morality and common sense amongst the American people. I hope we can make that a wrong statement of his. Generally, I'm seeing that to be the fact. Can we make it a change? They have money to spend, gas prices are down, and there is a consumer-driven life that must be led, because it's the economy, stupid. This is the Hormuz effect, a deliberate dumbing down of the society, driven more by the need to sustain an artificial cocoon of comfort than the necessity of building a foundation of moral and legal responsibility. But that dumbing down was since just last week, wasn't it? And the moral responsibility was ours to protect, irrespective of any dumbing down that has actually been going on for decades. Because the responsibility comes the need for accountability, and no American will be called to account for the embarrassing defeat, the U.S. has suffered because of this war. And Americans too, Scott. Don't forget. Not the U.S. Don't forget. Americans suffer due to these rights-devouring misadventures, so-called. Again, the U.S. is a government, and it's in a district. We seem to lose sight of the people that are in the country. The world will now wrestle with questions on how the U.S. fits into the changing world order, and any president worth his salt would do the same. But this would require an ability to engage in constructive self-criticism. Instead, the American population will be sold a non-existent victory while being unable to pick out the Strait of Hormuz on a map, let alone Menab. As long as the terms of the MOU hold, the American people may yet forget about the cost they have collectively paid for this Middle East debacle, and instead focus on the trickle of dollars diverted their way, as if this temporary thickening of the American wallet symbolizes the victory of a nation. There you go, Americans paying for the debacle. The war to nowhere. But are Trump's billionaire boys only getting a trickle of dollars or more billions in preferential taking power? The Hormuz effect is the ultimate bribe for a people who have lost all self-respect. That's right, bribed. Just like the great Kobe swindle. Will you be bribed again this time? Is your choice. A people willing to sweep the crimes committed in their names under a carpet of illusory economic well-being. The Hormuz effect is the ultimate symbol of the decline of the American dream, because it's the economy, stupid. And we, the people, will let Trump and the Uniparty do y'all again come midterms, won't you? Change my mind, please. Also, now do Ukraine, but before they get enriched uranium, these lunatics. UK to supply enriched uranium to Kiev, London seeks to support Ukraine's corruption-prone energy sector with £210 million deal. The UK will supply enriched uranium to companies, state nuclear energy company, and Energoatom under a £210 million or $280 million deal aimed at supporting Kiev's power grid, the British government has announced. The arrangement, backed by UK Export Finance, will enable British-based Urenco to supply enriched uranium to Energoatom for the next 2 years, London said on Monday. The deal was agreed to by British Prime Minister Keir Starmer and Vladimir Zelensky during their meeting at Downing Street last week. According to the British government, the agreement is intended to, quote, power Ukraine's nuclear power plants, close quote, and strengthen the country's energy security. But most of the reactors require uranium to be enriched to about 3 to 5% U-235 for effective operation. So the product supplied will be in what form and concentration? And why only supply 2 years? What happened to the existing long-term contract with the French company Orano, signed in March 6, 2025, for nuclear services supply with renew rights in 2040? And the short-stopping Western puppet International Atomic Energy Agency will be involved to ensure the security of the world, that the UK company won't be slipping a nuclear Mickey for Ukraine to use as a weapon, right? Right? Starmer said London would continue to back Kiev, quote, for as long as it takes, close quote. You get all the same words coming out of the Zionists. What is this? Who's running this place? Despite the string of corruption scandals involving Ukraine's energy sector, including Energoatom itself, which operates three Soviet-built nuclear power plants and remains a major source of revenue. Western-backed anti-corruption bodies in Ukraine have uncovered graft schemes at the state nuclear operator, including a major case linked to businessman Timur Mindich, a close associate of Zelensky, dubbed his wallet. A separate graft case involving Energoatom-linked infrastructure was reportedly earlier this month. The deal also comes amid repeated warnings from Moscow over nuclear safety in Ukraine. Russia has accused Kiev of carrying out multiple attacks in the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, Europe's largest nuclear facility, which has been under Russian control since March 2022. Earlier this month, the Ukrainian drone struck the machine hall of the plant's sixth power unit, as I reported. The International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed damage while stopping short of assigning blame. They'll be there to protect the world, right? Right? The UK's enriched uranium plan may also draw renewed scrutiny to Kiev's repeated hints about revisiting its non-nuclear status. Days before the escalation of the conflict in February 2022, Zelensky suggested that Ukraine could reconsider its non-proliferation obligations. Earlier this year, Zelensky said that he would accept nuclear weapons from Britain or France, quote, with pleasure, close quote, while insisting that no such offer had been made. Moscow has accused London and Paris of considering ways to provide Ukraine with components or technologies that could allow Kiev to develop nuclear weapons or a radioactive dirty bomb, allegations both Western governments have rejected. We can trust them, right? This has been BTW RLM 673, and I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. unquenchable thirst behind the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes, behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold, in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.